Now, in when you say vampires, you know, I think of Hollywood.
Sure.
I think of Dracula sneaking into people's rooms, biting them, sucking their blood. Right. This is different, right?
This is very different. Yeah, the vampire community is very, very diverse. And you have people who are very interested in, you know, role-playing games that feature vampires, those kinds of things. You have people who are more the lifestylers, who dress in the vampire garb, you know, the black trench coats and have the fangs and those sorts of things.
Right.
Sleep in coffins. And even those sorts of people, obviously there's something about the vampire that they relate to. But the vampires that I'm most interested in are people who actually identify metaphorically as vampires, and they call themselves real vampires to distinguish them from the other types.
And you generally, if you saw them on the streets during the daytime, you wouldn't know it, would you?
You wouldn't. You wouldn't. Yeah, and they dress like, you know, normal, regular people. They are normal, regular people.
I mean, they're doctors, lawyers, they're police officers, they're, you know, they're blue-collar workers, white-collar workers, they're mothers, daughters.
Absolutely. Yep. But they identify very strongly metaphorically with the vampire sort of image.
Why is that image at this point, Doctor, so popular? I mean, Hollywood's done a great job doing it, but I mean,
Hollywood has done a great job. Hollywood has done a great job. And, you know, there's a study a few years ago out of UCLA that looked at the popularity of various monsters. And far and away, the vampire is the king of monsters. And I think why that is because the vampires are really us. You know, the myths of vampires and vampire-like beings go way, way back. All different cultures. Vampires have a range of traits that are very desirable. You know, they're powerful and seductive and mysterious. But at the same time, vampires are repulsive and they're dangerous and they're edgy and a little bit unpredictable. So that really sort of personifies a lot of the human condition. We have the lighter side of us, but we have this darker side too. And I think human beings relate a lot to that. Which explains their popularity.
I mean, they've become the movie, the kids in Twilight. They've become teen idols.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
When you do your research into the study of vampires, how do you even approach that?
Well, I approach it, again, my expertise is sort of a multidisciplinary social scientist. So I take a leisure science approach, which is very sociological. I also take a social work approach. And with social work, we really value, you know, human diversity and social justice and fairness and those kinds of things, compassion. So for me, people who identify as vampires, it's really important to try to understand them and also to understand how society views them based on these stereotypes, Hollywood sort of portrayals, these different social discourses, because they're really misunderstood based on those kinds of things, which is why they're so invisible and why they haven't really come out much.
Are these people dangerous to society, Dr. Idle?
No, they're not. You know, and based on the existing social discourses that we, you know, that are common, a lot of times we tend to think that, oh, if you identify as a vampire, you must be delusional or dangerous or immoral or unethical in some sort of way. But that's not true. You know, there's no evidence of that. You know, these are people who they identify a little bit differently. They relate as vampires in terms of needing energy, you know, to sort of sustain a physical and mental health balance. You know, so it's more of a metaphorical kind of a thing, but they're not dangerous.
How important is the quest for blood in this?
Well, real vampires, the essential feature is they understand themselves as needing to feed and take vital human energy in some form. And different vampires have different ways of doing that, sort of preferred feeding methods. There are a small number of vampires who get that energy through taking small amounts of blood. So we call those sanguinarian vampires or sangs. Most other vampires are probably psychic vampires, or they take their energy through other sorts of means. So, but taking energy through blood is a common thing for a small number of vampires.
Is it a mental thing, Doctor? Yeah, in that, if they get this blood, do they think it has boosted their energy?
Absolutely, absolutely. And like I say, my scholarship is really geared around understanding meanings you know, in terms of, you know, what's meaningful, what's how these people understand themselves, their worlds, and again, on how mainstream understand them or misunderstand them.
If these people, I call them people, not vampires, if these people have, let's say, children,
sure.
Do the kids know what their parents are doing?
Probably not. Probably not. You know, that would be, you know, probably very private.
How did they find other vampires?
Well, the vampire community really sort of gained some momentum back in the 80s when we had these zines, these self-published sort of magazines.
I see.
People would write their experiences. And then with the internet, of course, all of a sudden you have this explosion in terms of different sorts of possibilities being available and accessible.
Like a vampire dating service?
Not
there's
exactly.
There's a new business right there.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, but the internet does provide a way for people to connect in different ways. And so that's really where I think the whole phenomenon took off in terms of people hooking up and, you know, and meeting.
Is any particular region of the country bigger than any other spot?
Not that I know of. There are vampires in pretty much probably any urban area in the United States, and even a lot of rural areas, too. And some vampires are part of communities, you know, little social groups, and other vampires seem to be more solitary. You know, they identify that way. They may participate online. You know, so people do it in different ways.
They're all over. Would they be embarrassed if the public knew who they were?
Well, that's an interesting question because, again, the public tends to view these people as probably unethical or dangerous or, you know, delusional, that kind of thing. Those are our common social discourses that normalize. So what that does is it prevents people from really disclosing, you know, or talking about this aspect of themselves. So that's really why people are very secretive in terms of how they relate that way.
I've got a friend in St. Louis. You put fangs on him, he looks like Count Dracula.
Okay.
I mean, he's an announcer out there. He's uh-huh. not a vampire, but
yeah.
We kid him all the time because if
sure.
he had the fangs, he'd look identical from the hair,
sure.
everything else. How often do some of these people, when they become the vampire, dress up like what we think vampires should wear?
Well, again, I mean, you know, you have lifestyles and vampire enthusiasts who, you know, a lot of their motivation is about dressing up and sort of role-playing the part in some way. But again, real vampires, it's very different. They may or may not be into that. It's more of an identity kind of a characteristic. Another researcher, Joe Laycock, has written about this, and I agree with him. He talks about vampire being more of an identity type of a thing rather than a lifestyle sort of thing.
Is there something wrong with these people? The fact that
no.
they would like to do this?
No, I don't think so, no. You know, real vampires are a group like any other social group, from what we can tell. You know, the regular people. And one of the things that we tend to do is we take this sort of social aspect of a person, and we really focus on it without recognizing the complexity and other roles that people play.